Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, Matt, to me, that is exactly what the Billie Jean King Cup, the Fed Cup as it used to be, the Davis Cup, and any sporting team competition, particularly in tennis, should all be about. What you and I have just witnessed over the last couple of hours between the United States and Slovakia, a match that has ended in the deciding doubles, the deciding set, the deciding tiebreak to decide everything in that particular tie, and one in which Slovakia managed to keep afloat because they'd lost their first one yesterday against Spain, and there they were with Victoria Kushmova coming up trumps and showing that she's the greatest player in the world at this sort of tournament. It was exhilarating that what we've just witnessed, and I didn't really expect her and her partner to get over the line in the end. But my word, they are one heck of a doubles partnership. We've got loads to talk about on the show today from Prague. Matt's there. He's been courtside all day long. There's been a brilliant story involving Australia. We're going to hear from Daria Gavrilova, who's quite a story in her own right a little bit later on. But we've got to start with what we've just seen because it was just so exhilarating.
Yeah, absolutely. USA versus Slovakia, USA versus Victoria Kuzmova. Can we call it that? Maybe we can. Player of the day, three wins from her four matches this week already. Gosh, it feels like this podcast has been a long time coming, David.
Look at your face. You are brimming with excitement
I'm very guilty of wanting to have my cake and eat it with Victoria Kuzmova because, you know, I'm quick to distance myself and quick to take credit when something like this happens. I'm aware, but, you know, she's been really good today. I mean, look, she beat Shelby Rogers in singles. That's a very, very legitimate win, and now she's backed it up with, as you said, a really close, exciting doubles win.
I think we should probably just put a bit of meat on the bones for the many listeners that weren't around at the start of 2019 during the Australian Open. Just remind people why we are so exercised about Victoria Kuzmova.
Yeah, well, the 2019 Australian Open was my first Grand Slam for the Tennis Podcast. I'd gone out to Melbourne. We were doing our pre-tournament predictions where we had to fill in the quarterfinalists onwards. And I picked Victoria Kuzmova to reach the quarterfinals of the 2019 Australian Open. Off the back of not very much, having seen her, I think, reach the semis in Auckland just the week before, I thought, you know, there's normally a surprise. Why not Kuzmova? Turns out there were lots of reasons why not Kuzmova. She lost to Elina Svitolina in the second round that tournament, and then sort of actually had quite a good 5 or 6 months. She got up into the top 50. She was around. She became a bit of a thing for us for a few months. But honestly, in the last year, last 18 months, her career has nosedived in singles anyway. She's now ranked, you know, well outside of the top 100. And had, you know, become a bit forgotten, really. But she loves this competition, and She's rising, VK rising, as you put in our WhatsApp. Yeah, what scenes?
Which is a little bit of a play on the Nick Kyrgios hashtag of about 2015, which was NK rising.
Yes, his own hashtag.
Yes, giving yourself your own hashtag is quite a statement. somebody else who perhaps hasn't quite backed it up over the years, but. She sure has in this competition, and that's been really one of the themes of the day, is the ability of players to play above themselves or to combine and put their country on their back and off they've gone into the distance. But, I mean, we're talking about Kuzmova because of our sort of little relationship with her that she knows absolutely nothing about, I would imagine. But her partner, tell us about her partner, because she's 23 years of age. And I have to be honest, I'd never heard of her before this week. And she can really play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she had a good junior career, but hasn't made the transition at all. And they really combine very well. Tereza Mihalikova is her name. And she's quite fierce compared to Kuzmova, who's quite a lot more on one level. And yeah, I mean, massive serve, I would say, would be the thing which really jumped out. She defended that serve very well. Laura Robson was on commentary on the world feed of that match and, you know, was pointing out serving is, you know, it's an obvious point, I suppose, but in doubles, so crucial to be able to hold your serve. And they did as a pair, and the two of them with their big returns were constantly threatening Dolheid and Vandeweghe of the US on their serve. And yeah, they played pretty well, I think, yesterday against Spain and lost a really close match. So for them to come back less than 24 hours later and put in a performance like that is significant and impressive.
I think particularly impressive because it really looked like they were going to win it handily because, frankly, in the first set, Dolheid and Vandeweghe were appalling. I mean, there was a stat given, Laura Robson gave the stat, that, and she said in that lovely kind of blunt sort of deadpan way of hers, 17 unforced errors in a 6-2 set of doubles is not great. and not a great day. And I mean, it really was, they just couldn't get anything going at all. And yet Vandeweghe is a player who's won Grand Slam doubles titles. I mean, she really is a good player. Now, obviously, she's been out a lot with injury, and she's been struggling to get back and into the kind of tour life, really. But this was a surprise, I think, for most people. Once Danielle Collins had leveled this tie at one apiece, and she won her singles very handily against Karolina Szmidlova. But, you know, once it went into this doubles, I think most people would have expected, particularly after seeing Spain win the doubles last night, that would have been one-sided. I would have thought so anyway. And yet they found themselves a set and a breakdown. And really, Kuzmova and Mihalikova just combined so well and just took it to them. And I mean, they didn't seem to be suffering from any nerves. And actually, I think it was a real achievement from Dolheid and Vandeweghe to get themselves back into it. And right at the end there, they got themselves a match point. They were 8-4 down in that match tiebreak. They clawed their way back, and you could see the tension rising on the other side of the net. And then once they got themselves to match point, you'd got Cathy Rinaldi pictured on screen just sort of roaring at them and kind of clenching her bicep and with her other hand as if to say, just put the hammer down like Thor right now. And so that's exactly what they tried to do. But Mihalikova just suddenly played out of her mind in order to just take it from them.
Yeah, totally. I'm quite stunned, actually. Yeah, it was great doubles. And I think, you know, we often talk about this competition potentially being a launch pad. And look, I'm getting way ahead of myself.
But, oh, do.
But, you know, little things like that can turn a player's career, you know, not transform them completely. But we have seen players in the past use moments in this competition to build. And, you know, if either Kuzmova or Mihalikova can do that, there's no guarantee that this win will put them through to the next round. This group is very wide open. Spain are in the driver's seat because a win against the USA tomorrow will send them through. So, you know, we might not even see Slovakia again in this competition. So, you know, they've gone out on a high if they have gone out, and if they progress, we'll see them again. But yeah, there's something for them to build on, I think, which is nice for them.
Mm, that'll sting the US overnight, won't it?
Oh, big time. And look, it's been a day of two shocks, really. You know, we'll get to the other one. I think the other one was actually more shocking, Australia beating Belgium, I think. But, you know, the US, they don't come here to lose to Slovakia. You know, they're 18-time champions. They've got a strong team. They haven't got their strongest, but, you know, Sven Stevens sat out today. That's how strong their team is. Shelby Rogers has been in good form. I think she got a late call up because Jessica Pegula withdrew after being a close COVID contact. So maybe she wasn't quite as ready as you might expect.
And she
but Danielle
can
Collins
veer.
Did a job.
She can veer dramatically in her level, can't she, Rogers? We saw that at the US Open when she beat Ash Barty, and then when she played Emma Raducanu, as well as Raducanu was playing that tournament. Rogers put in a shocker that day, and this was another one, really. And look, her opponent, Kuzmova, played really well and deserved to win in her own right. But even so, that was not a good Rogers performance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the only way for the USA to guarantee themselves into the semifinals is if they beat Spain 3-0. That will do it. And look, they're capable of that. Spain have got Saras Ribas-Tormo. That's going to be a tough match for whoever plays her. Carlos Suarez Navarro as well is capable of brilliance, as we know. But, you know, Spain are weakened. So the US have still got a shot here. And I think it's one of the difficult things about this new format, actually, is that ability to be able to rebound the next day. You know, yeah. Tennis players are not used to that generally. You know, once you've lost, you're out. But here you do have another chance, and it's a very quick turnaround. It's finished about 11:30 tonight. They won't be quite so late to bed as the teams that finished late last night, but it's still going to be pretty late, and they're playing again tomorrow afternoon. So maybe they'll freshen up the team and bring in Sloane Stephens. I don't know. But yeah, they've got a chance, but that'll be a blow for them, losing, for sure.
We've seen a few players today who were due to play. For instance, Françoise Abanda was due to play in her match, and she won yesterday, and she ended up having to pull out with a blister. You know, it's not that easy to turn that around as quickly and be fresh enough. So we'll see. I mean, I'm really looking forward to that. But I think one thing we did really see today, you mentioned it in passing yesterday about how the doubles is heightened in this particular format when they're playing three rubbers within a tie and the third one is the doubles. And if they split those first two singles, doubles just suddenly comes into its own. And that was it in a nutshell tonight. I mean, it would be nice if there was a bigger crowd. It deserved a really big crowd, that match. But even so, it was still electric. I mean, I'd got Novak Djokovic playing in Paris on the other screen at the same time, and he just about squeezed through 6-3 in the third, and that was great. Obviously, that was really good. But this match really was something else. This doubles has such a lot to offer when it matters like this.
Yeah, totally. And the players were into it, the players care. And I think the biggest thing I can say about what this match meant is, would you be watching that match, that doubles, if it was Charleston? You know, Charleston quarters, Charleston semis. Look, certainly some people would be. I'm way more interested in it when it's the deciding rubber of a Billie Jean King cup tie. It just, there's a lot on the line, and, you know, it's a shame that there wasn't a big crowd walking around the stadium today. There were times you might not even realize there was an event going on, you know, because there's just not that many people in the aisles, in the corridors, no big queues for food and drink and everything. It's not a great crowd, but the players are buying into this format, this competition, and as a viewer, that is the most important part, I think.
And they know, I suppose, that if they hang around long enough and end up playing the Czech Republic, then they're likely to get a crowd.
Look, Julien Beneteau said at the start of the week, as I said yesterday, the French team have probably been the most outspoken against the new format. That goes for the Davis Cup team as well. But he said, the way I'm trying to sell it to my players is whoever wins this competition is going to remember that for the rest of their life. And they're going to be talking about it as an amazing experience. So if you do commit to the competition and you do have success in it, it will be just as brilliant as winning in the old format. I'm sure of that. So, you know, it seems like a lot of the teams get that and understand that, and they're giving their all and going all out for the win.
Another match tonight that was of great significance is that Germany are out. They played incredibly hard. I mean, Andrea Petkovic has struggled all week, to be honest, with her form, and she lost comfortably. But Angelique Kerber against Belinda Bencic had this doubles not taken off. I think that's the match that I remembered from today, because that was electric as well. And they were both, I mean, particularly in the early stages of the third set, they were just hitting winner after winner, both players. I mean, it was a highlight reel, really. You could have snapshotted those first four games, you know, stuck them in 100 tweets, and people would just be absolutely lapping it up, really. And a great shame in the end that Angelique Kerber seemed to pull a stomach muscle or something like that, and was not really competitive right at the end of it. I thought it was fantastic that she finished the match, that she refused to give in to whatever it was and not let Bencic and the event have its kind of final moment, and she still finished the match. But Bencic was a very interesting player to watch today. I mean, spells of utter brilliance. What a player she is when she's on. And then spells of petulance, the likes of which are hard to believe a grown-up is indulging in, to be honest. At the end of the first set, I mean, she threw her racket down like my kids used to throw their toys up in the air when they didn't win something, when they were about two. And I think she get a code violation for unsporting conduct at that point?
She did. Yeah, she did. When she returned to the court, having thrown the racket, stormed out, when she came back, she got a unsportsmanlike conduct violation. Yeah. But then, you know, she channeled it. And actually, yes, it maybe wasn't a great, you know, she didn't cover herself in glory for 30 seconds there. But I think I probably fall down on the side of, well, if that's what she needed to do, that's what she needed to do. And it worked, because then the tennis she produced after that was formidable. And I actually went out to watch that match courtside, and the media seats on that court, it's not a particularly big court, they're quite low down. And gosh, I was just sort of reminded that I've not seen tennis up that close for such a long time. And I remember Catherine talking about that when she was at the O2 last year at the ATP Finals. Just, you can forget, I think, just how good these players are and how sweetly they hit the ball.
Yeah.
You know, you get so used to watching it on TV from that high angle. I think tennis has never quite figured out the best angle for TV viewing. Generally, I think it is the high up angle, but you do lose so much with that. And just watching it from close up, you get a real appreciation for how good they are. And for Bencic, as you said, the tennis she produced at times was breathtaking. I've always had, ever since the US Open this year, I've had Daniela Hantikova in mind, that description she came up with of Bencic walking into her shots, the way she takes them so early. I just noticed that all the time now with her. And yeah, she was brilliant, and Kerber did her best to drag her into a scrap and a fight. So it's a credit to Bencic, who is such a smooth player, that actually she sort of rode out those periods of petulance to end up producing the win and really good tennis with it. And now sets up a showdown with the Czech Republic, and the winner goes through.
Oh, that is something to savor, isn't it? Is that in a couple of days' time?
Yeah, Thursday night. So I think that'll be fantastic.
Right. Oh, well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm glad you said that about falling down on the side of saying fair enough. You know, if that's what she needs to get her going, let her chuck a toys up in the air, because I found myself shaking my head disapprovingly when I watched her do it. And then I thought, well, that's a bit hypocritical, isn't it? Because I'm always talking about how I love aggro. And there's often blokes who smash their rackets down and I think it's great. So why have I got a problem with the way she's doing it? I'm not sure exactly what it is. I think sometimes she turns around and she just looks like she's just trying to blame everybody. But then so does Andy Murray. So, you know, I think it is absolutely fair enough to give her the benefits of the doubt and also accept that she is then dusting herself down and going taking over. She took that match over from a set down. She'd lost a heartbreaking first set 7-5, and she went and thumped Kerber 6-2 in the second set. I mean, it was mightily impressive, got to say. So, yeah, Czech Republic against Switzerland is a match I'm really looking forward to in a couple of days' time.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. I didn't really expect to enjoy the start of the day quite as much as I did. Partly because we didn't finish until way after 1 a.m. and then I had to do the school run this morning. And I was finding that just a bit hard. But I was risen, I was shaken from my slumber by what I saw from Daria Gavrilova. And when she walked out onto the court, it suddenly struck me I haven't seen her in a heck of a long time.
It was Gavrilova?
Yeah. I mean, and it made me look up her results and reminded me that, you know, I used to commentate on it, on her for BT Sport playing against Maria Sharapova about 6 years ago, and she was a really relevant player. She was 20 in the world, was her highest ranking. And here she is down in the 400s. I mean, we're going to hear from her in a minute, Matt, and we've got your questions to listen to in that as well, and it details exactly what she's kind of gone through in recent months and over the last year, and just what an astonishing achievement her win today. She got a win over Greet Minnan today for which is part of the reason Australia won this tie and actually have gone through. But just give a very quick idea of how surprising this is, given she wasn't really supposed to be playing.
I spoke yesterday and I said I really like Belgium's chances in this group. You know, they've got pretty much their strongest team. They were playing a weakened Australia. And when I was thinking about a weakened Australia, I wasn't really even factoring in Gavrilova. I mean, I knew she was here. I just didn't expect her to take to the court. She hadn't played for 264 days since the Australian Open when she lost to Ash Barty. She's had an Achilles problem and yeah, she just hasn't played a tennis match for that long. So for her to then come into this competition and play as well as she did, you know, it wasn't Gavrilova at her very, very best that we've seen, like when you mentioned when she was up at 20 in the world, but it was recognisably her, all her usual traits, you know, her hustling, her fighting, her
bouncy ponytail.
Yeah, and sort of bouncy body just up and down on the court and chasing everything down. It was trademark Gavrilova from that perspective. And she'd, I think, already had a win over Greet Minnan in her career. And I think her selection probably threw Belgium a little bit. They probably weren't expecting to face her. And Molik, the Australia captain, said, sometimes you have to pick a player for historical reasons. And I'm aware of what Gavrilova has done in this competition in the past, how much she likes competing for Australia, her record against Minnan. And yeah, I just sort of had a hunch that she would do well today. And, you know, that's great captaincy, because I really don't think anyone was expecting that. And she's pulled it out the bag.
Yeah. Well, let's hear from Daria Gavrilova.
I'm feeling pretty exhausted. Yeah, it's been a long process to get here, 10 months off. I'm really happy. And I'm sure that the reason why I won was because of all the work that I've done, but also because of my team. Nothing better than having so much support. And Alicia was amazing. So I'm exhausted and, yeah, really happy.
If we look back on this last 10 months, what have been some of the toughest moments for you?
Well, probably not seeing my boyfriend, Luke, who's been traveling. I haven't seen him since March. So that's pretty tough. And in Victoria, in Melbourne, we were in lockdown since, I don't know, August. So that wasn't much fun because I couldn't see anyone, but maybe like my family, mom and brother, they were in Australia, which was really nice. And I was lucky, I was able to go and train, but I only saw two people, Nicole and our strength and conditioning coach, Gabe. So it was a bit boring at times. I was like in the gym by myself most of the time. So yeah, probably nothing really fazed me. Nothing will faze me after this few months. You know, I was probably struggling the most during Grand Slams, when everyone's playing Grand Slams. And even though, like, again, when Ash won Wimbledon, I was so happy for her. But I was, like, so sad that I was like, oh, my God, what am I doing here? I'm in this lockdown, just rehabbing. Am I ever gonna play again? I definitely had my ups and downs where I thought maybe my Achilles will never like feel good. And also like with my expectations with the surgery, that I would be like completely pain free, like that I would have my right Achilles feeling the same as my left Achilles. But it's definitely still like different, but it's good different. Like it's obviously I'm running as well as I used to, which is pretty cool. but yeah, I think my lowest was when everyone was at Grand Slams and I was just in Melbourne, literally hitting fed balls, and I had to go to a cobbler to get my shoes risen. So if I don't play on court, all my shoes are like high heels. And I was like, oh my God, I'm playing in these stupid shoes and just doing the same thing over and over again. So I think I'm probably here with the most motivation out of anyone here in Prague, because I haven't played a match since February, and everyone has had a long year, traveling, not knowing, with COVID, like all the bubbles and stuff, where I was like caged in Melbourne and was like, let's go, I want to play. So I was really excited, and I probably never had this much motivation in my life.
Sasha, I know that Achilles was a problem for a while, and I'm wondering, was it a difficult decision going under the knife? Just the process of deciding to have the surgery. What was it like for you?
So basically, after I played Ash, I couldn't walk. After the match, I walked back to the locker room. I had to take my shoes off. So I had two things going on with my Achilles. I had bone deformity, if you really want to go into it. it's called Haglund's bump. So we had to shave it off, and I had, or I still have, some Achilles issues that I'll just have to manage for the rest of my career. But after the match against Ash, I was like, that's it. I need to have surgery. And the coaches asked me, so what's your pain out of 10? I'm like, it's 11. I can't play like this. If I want to really give it a good go at my career, I need to do something about it. And so I had to pull out of all the tournaments, and I got scans, and I was honestly just hoping that there would be something, because with the Achilles injury, I've got enthesopathy. You can't really have surgery for that condition, but my Haglund's bump, it grew. So I was like, oh my God, that's it. I'm having surgery. So I was actually really excited that they did find something. And so I have one less problem to think about. And, today I didn't really think about my Achilles. So I'm really happy about that.
That's really something, Matt, to hear her describe. I mean, first of all, the surgery she went through, these are the things we don't really get to hear about from tennis players very often, and athletes in general. They often don't have the cameras on or talk to the newspapers. I mean, there was even a tweet from her where she'd posted something to YouTube and said, "I got to figure out a way to stay relevant." She actually tweeted, which is another little insight. I mean, not seeing a boyfriend since March. I mean, these are extremes, aren't they? And she's always struck me as somebody who just loves the game and loves competing and loves being part of it. And here she is at 27 years of age, and it might have been over. And who knows how much more she's going to be able to play. Well, I really do wish her the best, but I love the fact that she's had this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thought of, she's been in Melbourne, which I think has been the city longest in lockdown in the world. The thought of going through that while injured as well, and just must have been a really, really tough time. And she's given a really open, honest insight there into what it was like. And, also very upfront and detailed about her injury. I often understand when players don't go into a lot of detail about their injury, but, that's a lot she's had to deal with, and it's been troubling her for a long time. It sounded like it was a relief actually to get the surgery for her, but just saying that when surgery is a relief, that's an indicator of how bad it's been. I'm thrilled for her actually that she got this moment today.
At the same time, even at 1-0, you don't expect Australia to win that tie 2-0, because they were going to be up against Elise Mertens in the second rubber. Who's the standout player in that tie, and one of the standout players actually in the whole competition? And yet she was beaten by a player with the actual name Storm Sanders. And I've been waiting to say the name Storm Sanders on this podcast for a hell of a long time, because I've seen the name Storm Sanders written on various websites for about the last 6 years. And I've always thought, who is that? And is she ever going to be relevant in our world in order to talk about her? Because it's the most magnificent name. I told my wife, I'm watching a player called Storm Sanders, and immediately made her go, oh, oh, what's she like? What's her story? And I always remember that she came along at the same time two American sisters were on the scene, and their names were Hurricane and Tornado Black. And they were players that had been given those names by their parents for marketing reasons. Now, I have absolutely no idea whether Storm Sanders was given this name for marketing reasons. But I've always sort of, I do love a bit of hype and whatnot, as you know. But anyway, she plays a lovely brand of tennis, left-handed. She's got all sorts of angles, and she took it to Elisa Mertens. All the way through, as well as she was playing, I thought, she's not going to win. Mertens will turn us around. It won't happen. It plumbing well did happen. She was fantastic.
Yeah. Just to confirm, David's kids do not have names for marketing reasons.
No.
I was so impressed. And actually, it was you that really alerted me to this match and how good it was. There was quite a lot going on at the time. I was sort of running about the place, and you said, gosh, Storm Sanders is great to watch. So again, I went out to watch that match on the centre court in the bigger stadium, and I really saw what you meant. She was great to watch. She was not afraid to come forward, always took the ball on, looking to do something with it. And in the second set, she had a lot of chances, but couldn't quite take them. And it went to a tie break, and I thought, okay, Mertens is going to come through here. Sanders would have pushed her, but, you know, we've seen that before. Sanders knuckled down, won the tiebreak, and then in the third set, she played unplayable tennis. Everything she hit just went in, hit the line, and it's by far and away the best win she's ever had in her career, her first top 20 win. I think she'd only ever had two top 50 wins. But, you know, she is a player who's been gradually building. She's gone from about 280 in the world to 140 in the world this year. She's still over 100 places behind Elise Mertens. It's still a massive, massive upset. But, yeah, she's on the rise. And, you know, just like we said before about Kuzmova, can this be a building block for her, a launch pad for more? Because with that game, you think there's no way she should be 100 places below Mertens. It's just a question of consistency and being able to be on the tour regularly. She's another one who's had a lot of injuries, I believe, as well.
Great story, and it does mean that Australia have got a real chance now. So when do they play?
Yeah, so they play Thursday morning against Belarus, and Australia will go through with any win, you know, 2-1, 3-0, they will go through. Molik said that Tomjanovic didn't play today because she had a non-COVID illness. She was pretty emphatic that she'll be back for Thursday, so that strengthens them, you would think. I like Molik's punchiness. She says, they're beatable. Like, she was just like, that's a winnable match for us, you know, and that's the sort of talk that you know is happening in the dressing room. You know they're talking about the other teams like that, but so often the captains, you know, we'll say something like, oh, we respect all of our opponents and it's going to be a tough match. Of course, true, but I like, they're beatable and we're going for the win.
Yeah. Alicia, you're welcome on the Tennis Podcast anytime you like with that sort of stuff. So, brilliant. Okay, well, what we got tomorrow, Matt?
We have Russia versus France first. Just goes down to two matches tomorrow. We've had four on each day, on Monday and Tuesday. From now on, there's just two every day, one morning, one evening. And the morning tomorrow is Russia-France. France have to win 3-0. If they don't win 3-0, Russia are through. Canada already out of that group. So be interesting to see what France do with their team based on everything we know about Caroline Garcia carrying a little bit of an injury. Russia, big favourites, though. We haven't really talked about them today, but that's because there wasn't that much to talk about, really. They easily beat Canada. Marino put up a decent fight against Pavlyuchenkova, but easy win for Kasatkina. And they won the doubles easily as well. So Russia in very strong pole position. And then the evening match is USA versus Spain, which we've sort of already previewed. That'll be tight, I think. That'll be close. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, very much so. Me too. If you want to watch a stream of it, they have a stream available on the Billie Jean King Cup Finals website. It's €7.99 for the week. If you want to get hold of that, we've got a link in our show notes if you want to have a look. I mean, it's also on various tennis channels around the world, like the Tennis Channel in the US and Tennis Channel International. Yeah. Have a look if you can, because it's well worth it. As I said earlier, Novak Djokovic won through his first match, Matt, since losing that heartbreaker against Daniil Medvedev in the US Open. And I mean, he was really pushed by Martin Fucsovics today. I know you didn't get a chance to see that, but just there was a moment in it when he was really sort of embroiled in this fight in the third set, and he won a point, and you got the sense that he suddenly reminded himself how bloody great this is to be in the middle of a battle in Paris. And he just exploded with emotion and the crowd went up for him. And it's one of those, isn't it? I guess you never know how you're going to rebound from a real heartbreaking loss like that.
Yeah. And I think something I'm interested in with Novak Djokovic at the moment and for the rest of his career really is whether the perception of him has changed as he goes to these crowds around the world. I think actually he's always been quite well received in Paris. I remember that amazing reception he got at the 2015 French Open final when he lost to Wawrinka. But, you know, I think he spoke about it in his pre-tournament press conference in Paris. Again, just what it meant to him to get that support in the US Open final. And I think I saw that he got incredible reception for his doubles match that was on center court yesterday. And, you know, I'm just interested whether there has been a shift, you know, especially now, you know, this year, really, since the French Open, it's been him. You know, Federer's not been there, Nadal's not been there. He's sort of been carrying that big three. I find that all interesting. Obviously, the tennis as well.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, we'll look forward to tomorrow. We are going to be putting out our newsletter tomorrow. So if you want to get on the list for it, our newsletter sign-up link is also available in our show notes. And so we'll have predictions in there. We'll be looking up some Kuznetsova stats, no doubt, because Matt's pumped.
Player in the tournament, David.
She is amazing. She's suddenly shown what all the promise and excitement was all about. So get yourself on the newsletter list and we'll send that to you tomorrow. It's free. It's just, you know, just get on it. We'll be back with another tennis podcast tomorrow night, which is executive produced by top bloke Chris Albert Lee. We have our mascots individually. Catherine, who's presenting Amazon Prime Video this week, coverage of Paris. Her mascot is Zeus. Mine is Rogue. Matt's is Scouser Mousel. Do we have a mascot for this week, Matt?
Yes, we do, actually. We have two mascots for this week.
Well, fantastic.
Two cats. They're actually famous cats. They have way more Twitter followers than I have.
Bloody hell.
Samson and Chester. Samson's a black and white cat, almost 13, and Chester is a grey, silver tabby. And owned by Kirsty. Great cats, great pictures, and they'll be in the newsletter.
Oh, right, well, get yourself on it. Right, okay, that's enough for tonight. I'm off to bed. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.